We're preparing Echadasa, the 11th chapter of Hilchos Tefillah, the Laws of Prayer. The standard Rambam, this will be in Daf Chaf Hayam at Beis. Halacha Aleph. K'makom sheish b'asar Yisrael, any place that has 10 Jews, tzorach la'achon lo bayis, you have to prepare a house, she'achon sebo l'tefillah, b'chol eis tefillah, that they can gather for prayer during any time of prayer. K'makom zenik or Beis HaKnesses, this place is known as the Beis HaKnesses, the shul, the synagogue. The inhabitants of the city can force one another to build a shul, and to buy the Torah, the prophets, and the writings, the Tanakh, for that shul. Halacha Beis. When you build a shul, you should build it only in the highest part of the city. As it says, it calls out at the head of all of the streets, or of the markets. It's elevated. The actual building should be higher than all of the courtyards of the city. As it says, the Roman is basilikenu, to elevate the house of our God. In poschin pischei aknesses elba mizrach, you open the doors of the shul only. That is to say, the main entrance should be in the east. As it says, v'chonim l'chem mishkan kedma, and those that rested in front of the mishkan to the east. Now, the Hagos Maimoni brings down in the name of Tosfos and Rashi that when it says east in the Gemara, it's referring to those who were praying towards the west. They were east of Israel and were facing west, therefore the door should be to the east, and they faced west. But according to them, in the shuls that are facing east, then the door would be in the west. There's no intrinsic need for the door to be in the east. It's just the door is in the opposite direction, according to them, of which you pray. They build in it a hechel, like an ark, which the Torah is put. And that ark is built in the direction towards which they face in that city. So they should be facing the ark when they pray. You put a platform in the middle of the room, so that the Torah reader should go up on this platform, or the person who is speaking, giving a sermon for the people, so that they should all hear him. When they put the box that has the Sefer Torah, the Kesef Mishnah learns this is referring to on top of the platform, they would put a, what we call a bima, a box over which they would put the Torah, read the Sefer Torah. So we meet a Moshe Be'emtza. You put this in the middle of the platform, in the middle of the bima. The back of the box from which you're reading the Torah is facing the ark, but now the front of it is facing the people. In other words, the Sefer Torah is lying down with the top part facing the ark and the bottom part facing the people, so that the person who's reading the Sefer Torah is in fact facing the ark. Dalad, Ketan Am Yoshin Bevatik Nesias, how do the people sit in the synagogues? Askeram Yoshin Upneim Klapi Om. The people sit, the elders sit, facing the people. Uvachrem Klapi Hechal, with their backs towards the ark. In other words, they're on the wall, sitting against the wall, which the ark is. Chalam Yoshin Shur Lefnei Shura, all of the rest of the people are sitting in rows. Ne Shur Lachore Ashur Shulfaneha, with the face of each row in the back of the preceding row. So that all of the people are facing the holy, facing the ark, that is, and towards the elders, and towards the prayer stand. When the reader is standing up to pray, Omid Barazi stands on the ground of Neteva before the prayer stand, upon of Lufnei Kodesh, and he is facing the holy, that is the ark, Kishar Om, like the rest of the people. Hey, Batik Nesis, Batim Midrashis, Nogin Behen Kovod. You're supposed to show respect, honor to shuls and houses of study. Machabdin Olsan, Marbitin Olsan. You sweep them and wash them. The Nogin Kol Yisrael, Besfarad, Bemarav, Beshino, Beret Hatzvi. The Jews in Spain, in the West, in Babylonia, and in Israel, Lahad kashishes bevot knesias, they light lamps in the synagogues. Latzia bekarkon machtzalos, and they put mats on the floors. Yileshevelem, to sit on them. Bar Edom, in the cities of Edom, I guess it means Rome, in other words, the cities of Central Europe. Yoshinbo alakisos, there they sit on chairs. That's their custom. Halacha vav. But Ignatius about the Midrash is saying, no, Gimbahin Kalas Rosh. You're not supposed to be lightheaded in a synagogue or a place of study. Kigalskok, Vahisol, Vasicha Batela, like to fool around, to joke, to have empty words. Vinochimbahin, you don't eat in them. Vinchosimbahin, you don't drink in them. Vinosimbahin, you do not get any other benefit out of them. Vinotalimbahin, you do not take a stroll in them. Vinachnosimbahin, Bechamot Neachama, Bechamot Neachshamim. You don't go into them in the hot days to protect yourself from the sun, or in the rain to protect yourself from the rain. The sages and the students can eat and drink there when it's difficult otherwise. Since they're there studying, praying all day long, they can't eat if there is no other accessible place to eat and drink. You don't make reckonings there, figure out different policies of what to do for the city. Ela im kein hayu cheshbon shel mitzvah, unless there were reckonings of a mitzvah, kagon kupa shel tzedakah, like the charity collection, pidyon shvuyim, or the redemption of the captives, kiyotzim behem, and other such things. Vin spidim behem ela hesped shel rabim, you only make a eulogy if it's a eulogy for the many, kagon, for example, to make a eulogy there of the, in other words, it's needed by the many, it's for the purpose of the many, because it's a eulogy of the great sages of that community. That everyone comes and gathers because of them. If the synagogue or study house had two doors, you shouldn't make it a shortcut. For example, going through one door and out the other in order to make the way closer. Because you're not allowed to enter there except for doing a mitzvah. Somebody has to enter a synagogue to call a child or his friend. He can go in. He should read some Tanakh, or say some law, and then he should call his friend, so that he shouldn't enter only for his own needs. If he doesn't know, he's not wise enough to study Torah, you should tell one of the children, read for me the sentence of the Tanakh that you're studying. Or you should just pause a little bit in the synagogue and then leave. He's sitting in the shul is part of a mitzvah. As it says, Ashrei Yoshev Vesecha V'Gomer. Fortunate are those who dwell in your house, and so on. Yud. Mishenichnas Aspalal Olikras Mutala Lotus Bepesach Shekenegdo K'ti Dekar V'Sederach. If somebody went in there in order to study Torah, to pray, he can go through, he can leave through the other door, even though he's shortening his way. Mutala Adam Nechonetz Beseknesis B'Maklo B'Mnalo U'B'Apund It is permitted to walk into a synagogue while carrying your staff and your shoes and your money belt and your dust that's on your feet, which is not allowed in the Beis Hamikdash, but in the shul it's not as strict as the actual temple. If he had to spit, he may even spit in the synagogue. The synagogue, or a place of study that was destroyed, still remains holy. Shnemas, it says, Hashimosi es mikdashechem, I will cause desolation to your holy places. Afishin shomim mikdashosan enamdim, even though they are desolate, they still retain their holiness. Kim shenogim behen kavod b'yeshuvan, just as we honor them when they are being used. Kachnogim, oh, behen b'churbanim, so we pay respect to them even when they're destroyed. Chutz mikibut v'ribut, shemchavdin olsen v'marbitin olsen, except for sweeping the floors and washing them, which you don't have to do. All of a sudden, if grass is growing in the ruined synagogues, toshen olsen b'manich olsen b'mkoman, you uproot the grass and you leave it stand in its place. Yishir olsen om, that the people should see the grass piling up there. Tarucham v'yivnum, and their spirit will be aroused, and they will build or rebuild the shul. You're not allowed to destroy a synagogue in order to build another one, either in that same site, on that same site, or even somewhere else. You can build another one and then destroy the first one. The reason you can't build before building a new one is maybe an accident will occur and they won't build a new one. Even if he's tearing down one wall of the synagogue, you should first build a new replacement wall on the side, and then, and only then, tear down the old wall. When does this apply? If the foundations of the old shul were not destroyed, or its walls are not leaning over and about to fall. If the foundations are destroyed or the walls are tipped over and they're about to fall, you can destroy it immediately, take it apart, since it's going to collapse anyway. And you begin to build, and you do it quickly, day and night, lest the hour becomes difficult and you're going to remain, the synagogue is going to remain unbuilt. So you have to hurry it up. You can change a synagogue into a house of study. But you're not supposed to make a house of study into a plain synagogue where they don't study. Because the holiness of a house of study is greater than that of a synagogue. You can go up in holy things and not go down. If the people of the city sold the synagogue, they can buy with the money a teva, the ark, which the Torah has kept. If they sold the ark, they can buy with the money the covering or the box for the Sefer Torah itself. If they sold the covering or the little box in which the Sefer Torah is, they can buy something holier, namely the Chumash, the five books that were written in separate scrolls. Machu Chumashim, if they sold the five books, Lochim B'dom of Sefer Torah, they can buy something holier still, a Torah scroll. Avlamachu Sefer Torah, but if they sold a Sefer Torah, ain't Lochim B'dom of Vela Sefer Torah Acher, you can only buy, there's nothing holier than a Sefer Torah, so all you could buy is another Sefer Torah. Shein Shav Kedusha Lomadim Kedusha Sefer Torah, because there is no holier thing than the Sefer Torah. The same would be true for what's left over. If they sold one thing and they bought another, there's money left over, you can only buy with the leftover something holier than the original thing. If the people collected money to build a study house, or to build a synagogue, or to buy an ark, or Torah covers, or a Torah scroll, and they wanted to change whatever they collected. You can only change it from a light holiness to a stricter holiness. But if they did what they collected to do, let's say they collected money to buy a shul, or they collected money to buy a Sefer Torah, and they made enough and more. There was leftover money. They bought the Sefer Torah, now they have leftover money. So they can use the leftover for whatever they want. All of the implements used in the synagogue have the law of the synagogue. The cover of the ark in which the books are kept has the law of the cover of the books themselves, the Sefer Torah scrolls themselves. If a condition was made over them to begin with, then it goes according to the condition. In other words, if they bought an ark but they made a condition that they could put something else in the ark besides the Torah, they could use it for something less holy, then it's valid since they bought it under that condition in the first place. When do we say that you can sell a synagogue if it's one that belongs to a village? It was made in the first place for the villagers. That they should pray in it. So if they all decide they want to sell it, they can. Provided, of course, that there's another synagogue, as we learned before. Avo Besek Neser Shel Krochem, but a synagogue of a large city. However, Das Kolan Shalom Nasa, it was made having in mind everyone in the world. Shiova Vispalabo, Kolabol El Hamdina, that anyone who comes to the country should pray over there. Therefore, Nasa Shel Kol Yisrael, it becomes the property of the whole Jewish people. If you Mokhno Salolim, you can never sell it, even if everyone in the city agrees to sell it, but it's not only theirs, it's everyone's. Zion, Bnei Kfar Shurat Olimkur Besek Neser Shalahem, Olivnus Bedom of Besek Neser Sacher, Olivnus Bedom of Tevo Sefer Torah. If the people of a village wanted to sell their synagogue or build with the money another synagogue or buy with the money a ark or a Torah scroll, Shrichem Lahasna Salokeach, they have to make a condition with the purchaser. That they shouldn't make it into a bathhouse or a tannery. He defines Borski as a tannery. Not a place of immersion. Not a bathroom. Because all of these places are very undignified and not right for a former shul. However, if the seven leaders of the city, like the council of the city, made a condition in the presence of all of the inhabitants of the city that the purchaser should do as he pleases, then this is permitted. The Kesef Mishnah brings a Ravid. It's not printed for some reason in the text of the Rambam, but the Kesef Mishnah brings it down a Ravid who says that he disagrees with the Rambam and holds they cannot make a condition for these four things. He says they can make a condition to plant things there or something, but not for these things which are degrading, sort of. And the Kesef Mishnah explains how the two interpretations, the Rambam and the Ravid, depends on how you interpret the Gemara there. Halacha Yud Ches. V'cheinim is to shiva tuva ir b'mayim edan shu ir, amosar adamim shiyuchulin arei chulin. If the seven leaders of the city, sort of the city council, made a condition in the presence of everyone of the city that any surplus money should be secular, it is secular and they can do what they want with it. If they take the money from selling the shul and they build another shul, and then when they do this, when they purchase another synagogue or an ark or the covers or the Chumash scrolls or the Sefer Torah scrolls, and the rest is non-holy, as they made the condition, the answer ben mashiyot, so they do as they please. Now, the Kesef Mishnah points out that according to the Rambam, it seems that only the surplus can be used, even with the condition, for something non-holy. But they can't make a condition that they're going to sell the synagogue and use the money for something non-holy. Only if they're using it for something holy and they have leftover, then they can use it. Because the Mishnah brings down that others, like Rashi and the Rosh, disagree and feel that you can make the entire money non-holy if such is the condition. Yutes. V'cheinim kiblu alein kol anshei ir al ruvam adam echad. If everyone in the city, or most of the people, accepted the authority of one man, kol mashas also, whatever he does, goes. V'umeichem v'neisim levadi k'fi mashiyira. He can sell or give alone, as he sees fit. He asks for the mashiyir, and he can make any conditions that he sees fit. Chav. Kishem shemut alayim lim kabe sekneses kachnos nes also b'matona. Just as they can sell a synagogue, so they can give it away as a gift. Shilu lohayu lahem latibur hanaya b'matona zu lo nasnuha. If the congregation would be benefiting by this gift, they surely wouldn't give it. So it's considered as if they're selling it, even if they're not actually getting money in return. But you cannot rent it or give it as a security. Similarly, when they tear down shuls to rebuild them, you can sell or exchange or give as a gift the wood, the bricks, and the earth. But you cannot lend to them. The holiness does not depart from them, only by the act of selling them for money or by the pleasure that they get from it, from giving it away, since they are getting a benefit, presumably, which counts like money. In other words, it's sort of like a desanctification process. Chafalo Prochov Shalir, the large marketplace, the central marketplace of the city, even though people pray there on fast days or in mamados, the days in which that city's representatives are present in the temple for the sacrifices. Nishakibitz Rav, because there's a large crowd, the Batik Nisias Mechilin Olson, and the synagogues cannot contain all of the people. So even though on those special occasions they pray in the marketplace, or the large street, in Bokidusha, it doesn't have holiness. And they shall arrive because it's temporary, v'lonik for l'tfila, it's not set aside for prayer. Similarly, houses or courtyards that people get together in order to pray do not acquire any holiness. They were not set aside only for prayer. They're used for other things primarily. They're occasionally used for prayer. Like a person who prays in his own house, and we don't say the house has the holiness of a synagogue and all of the laws of a synagogue that were discussed until now. So the same would apply even when the congregation sometimes prays in a house or in a courtyard, it would not acquire the status of a synagogue.